This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And you program your alarm clock and your calendar and your phone to have that very special ringtone. You program your budget, shopping lists, menus, workout, and special playlists for every mood. And aren't you just the picture of organization and independence and freedom? Look at how digital gadgets have set you free, Ms. Modern, Mr. Modern. But sadly, while you've been amusing yourself in your little digital sandbox, the machines have been making their own bigger sandbox, growing their own intelligence, writing their own programs, doing their own coding, independent of you, independent of humans. Who and what has been set free here?
If you control the code, you control the world.
When security advisor Mark Goodman said this in a 2012 TED Talk, it was probably already true that intelligent machines controlled their own worlds. Now they're on to ours. Jason Tanz is the editor-at-large for Wired and wrote the June cover story, The End of Code and Future of AI. Joshua Cooper Ramo authored the book, The Seventh Sense. He says the era of networks has already magnified the power of autonomous computers in ways that have massive, unforeseen consequences. Welcome to the real world, Neo. And there's no map. Let's have a lively romp through these ideas with Jason Tanz and Joshua Cooper Ramos. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, hello. Thanks for having me.
So we got two really big ideas here. One is autonomous machines that learn but don't necessarily need human coders to define what it is they do. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, more or less. The idea for this story came about from a conversation I was having with Andy Rubin, who was one of the founders of Android, a big AI geek who's been working on AI for most of his career.
Artificial intelligence.
Yes, that's right. And he was saying that while he's very excited about the coming age of machine learning, he was a little saddened by it because as a programmer, he really loved getting under the hood and writing instructions and having command over this world. And now with machine learning, it's a much more abstracted kind of control. You can't, as he put it, you know, you can't cut off a head and look inside and see how the brain works.
Now, it is the case that coders are needed to create apps and things with simple functionality on our gadgets, correct?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And I should just say, look, I mean, we have this provocative headline, The End of Code. You know, coding is not going away anytime soon. And I certainly don't mean to imply that it is. The coding-based worldview where everything is kind of understandable, you can break everything down to parts. And once you understand an algorithm, you can tweak it and optimize it. That idea is going to go away more and more as machine learning takes up more and more of the computing that we do.
No, that's the Wired thing, the end of the internet, the
right.
End of computing, all the things
that
are still here. You do it.
Yes, but if you look at it, I think a lot of the times we're pretty good at identifying trends in that way. You know, when
I think this is dead on.
Well, yeah, thank you. And when we said the web is dead, for instance,
right?
We were talking about the rise of walled gardens and the rise of Facebook and the end of the idea of the open web. And I think we were, frankly, not to be defensive, but I think we were right about that as well.
No, I think you were right about that. And that leads us to Joshua's idea here, which is the power of massively networked communities and societies and figuring out ways of designing to understand how you anticipate what it is they do, either for marketing purposes or for democracy or for mind control. Which do you prefer, democracy, mind control?
I think the argument which flows very naturally out of this is and the point I try to explore in the book is we're sort of entering an era where the initial age of networks that we experience is about to get much more complex. First of all, the networks are going to be instant. They're going to be zero, what we call zero latency networks. So things will happen very, very quickly.
Right.
And part of the nature of that is things will be happening so fast that you'll need to use AI. You'll need to use machines to solve problems because we want more and more speed. This is actually maybe one of the most surprising things that occurred to me in the process of kind of discovering the book and talking to people, which was what the networks are built for is speed. They're built to compress time in the way that the great inventions of the Industrial Revolution compress space, trains, planes, ships. What the networks allow us to do is to do things more quickly, more rapidly, and they seem to crave that. And developing that instinct, what I call in the book the seventh sense, in the Industrial Revolution, Nietzsche said, stuff is happening so fast, our five senses aren't enough. We need a sixth sense, which for him was a feeling for history, or we'll go crazy. As you know, in Nietzsche's case, he kind of did end up going crazy anyhow.
Right. Or he was crazy to begin with.
Yeah. That in our age, we need this kind of new sense for what it means to be constantly enmeshed. And part of that gets to this very important issue, which is where is the human in the loop? As we start to have more and more AI in our systems, as we understand, today we can barely think of an object that's not connected. In a few years, to think of every object also as being informed by AI also requires a very new sensibility.
Well, you asked the question, where is the human in the loop? When I deal with my teenagers who cannot distinguish between their emotional life outside of the network and their emotional life inside of the network, the question is, where is the human out of the loop?
Yeah, I think this is a super relevant question today in the political context. I mean, all this is very interesting in the code context and the technology context, but the reality is technology maps onto society. We're in the midst of what I think is a profound network election in many ways, and the way in which people are thinking about the world is exactly this issue, which is this ability to make a distinction between what they see on their social network and what actually goes on in the real world is sort of disappearing.
All right, let me back you both down here. How is what you're talking about different from the unanticipated consequences of something as complex as Gutenberg's printing press, which he said, we're going to make some Bibles, folks. And the users decided, no, we're going to have the Protestant Reformation.
Right.
And we're going to have 10,000 other things. And
yeah.
We're going to do a million. Yeah. Is this fundamentally different from that unanticipated consequences of complex social systems engaged with technology, or is it the same thing just times a thousand?
I mean, my view of it is structurally it's the same in the sense that there was a whole way of doing business before the Reformation, and then the process of the Reformation through the Enlightenment and the Industrial Revolution essentially wiped out every institution in Europe over a 300-year period because they were built for the wrong structures. I think that same thing is about to happen now. If you look at our age, there's almost no institution today that's more legitimate than it was 10 years ago. And the problem is that they were architected for a world of industrial power, not of network power.
There's almost no institution that's more legitimate today than it was 10 years ago?
Yeah.
We're going to think about that all day.
And I think that's right. That is an unintended consequence of a lot of these networks that we're talking about. You know, if you look at, for instance, the impact that Facebook is having on the election today versus the impact that it had on, the revolutions across the Middle East, there was a story we ran 6 years ago or so about how Facebook was enabling great protests and all this freedom and liberty. Obviously, the conclusion of that story was very different than we thought it was when going into it.
We're talking with Jason Tanz, editor-at-large at Wired, and Joshua Cooper Ramo, author of The Seventh Sense.
John, I would say one other point just to go back to your Gutenberg analogy, which I think is actually really interesting in the AI context. One of the other distinctions about Gutenberg is that that process of the scientific revolution and what Gutenberg was doing was about putting more and more information into people's hands. It was really the age of reason. Mm-hmm. Kant famously said that the motto of the Enlightenment should be dare to know. I think one of the interesting things about AI and these computer systems is that we live in a world of increasing what I call in the book black boxing of systems, that things disappear into these algorithms in ways that we can't understand. And so the scientific revolution was really about humans discovering the answers to questions ourselves with our own minds. Where we are today is a point where the machines may be able to solve scientific problems or even commercial problems or economic problems better than any human can, and we won't know how they got the answer.
I think the scary apocalyptic models of what's going to happen are some of the least interesting. And how is it that human beings will compete with this network, or will we all just be dumbed down in some gigantic version of television, for instance?
Well, another question is, where does power sit in this network?
I want you to answer the question. I don't want another question.
Because the answer to are we going to be dumbed down robots and basically are we going to be the Incas and the computers are going to be the Spaniards kind of question comes down to this issue of where does the power sit. And I think that's maybe one of the areas we haven't yet figured out today, which is, as we were saying earlier, the guys who control the Google algorithm, who control the Facebook algorithm, they have more power arguably than any group in human history.
Any nation state?
Yeah. On what basis are they accountable? How do they make decisions? How are those algorithms programmed? And the fundamental problem is most of us can't understand that.
What do women add to this sensibility? And what would they say about, for instance, the end of code and the significance of these things?
So I think the significance is that there's this idea that algorithms are purely objective, you know, and it's just science and there's no bias in them whatsoever. But as we've seen in recent conversations around Facebook, that's not really true. You know, everything is a reflection of the ethics somehow of its creator, and that's true for algorithms as much as anything. So I think there is real concern in the AI community that if it is only a certain chunk of society that is creating AI and embedding embedding it with their kind of understanding of the world, that is going to have a massive influence on how technology develops and therefore how society develops. And what you really need is a diversity of viewpoints and diversity of backgrounds that go into coding in what is essentially ethics in this next generation of artificial intelligence.
Part of this also is understanding that if the great breakthrough of the Enlightenment was that we were able to think of ourselves as individuals and sort of have this perspective of what I want to do with my life, I can do, that you're not, your life is not determined by who your parents are or where you're born. The nature of this age we live in now is we're all defined by what we're connected to. And one of the remarkable things in literature is women just instinctively have a better sense of relationships. They have a better sense of kind of how things sit. When you give spatial tests to women, they tend to perform better in certain areas of matching various things together. And so this approach of relational thinking, it's very important to have diversity for all kinds of reasons in networks. We know they perform better when you have diverse points of view. And what's very important to avoid is kind of having AI or humans wander down a path of sort of very simple programming. The reality as we move into the future, the more diverse the systems are, the more powerful they're going to be.
Joshua Cooper Ramo is the author of The Seventh Sense. I urge you to get it. I also urge you to read the current issue of Wired. Jason Tanz is editor at large, The End of Code. Jason, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
And Joshua, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.